from two guys willing to defer their salaries. It's At the Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith.
This week on At the Letters, it's the halfway point of the Blue Jays season. We'll take a look back on some of the Blue Jays' moves and figure out whether they worked or not. We'll talk to Ben Badler, who covers international prospects for Baseball America, about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And we'll hear from General Manager Alex Anthopoulos on what he might be looking to do ahead of the July 31st non-waiver trade deadline. All that and more on ATL. It's At the Letters for Tuesday, June the 30th on Sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. My name is Arden Zwelling, and I am joined, as always, by Sportsnet.ca baseball editor Ben Nicholson-Smith. Ben, what's going on?
Not a whole lot. You really said that title with vigor there.
Trying to bring it.
Nice. Just
trying to bring it like Josh Donaldson every day, the compete level.
Yeah, it's true. He's bringing it, that's for sure. Lots of defensive gems from Josh Donaldson.
Yeah, you got to bring that intensity to the ballpark every day. That's what they like. They like when you're intense.
Yeah. No, for sure. Leading vote getter. It's paying off for him.
That was kind of a crazy turn of events there.
Yeah.
Can I say this? Maybe this is a little tinfoil hat, but I feel like it's all a conspiracy. I feel like Major League Baseball went out and said, hey, look, all these Royals are leading in all the categories, generate all the interest, generate the buzz. Now all of a sudden Royals are dropping off and other teams are, did all these Kansas City voters who are like bringing up these 10-minute email addresses and voting 35 times, an hour or whatever they were doing, what happened to all of them? Where'd they go?
It's not a conspiracy.
How do you know?
Well,
how do you know?
If you're MLB, of all the things to create a conspiracy around, I feel like they could do so much better.
I guess so, but this is so like, that's what they want you to think, Ben. They want you to think they wouldn't create this conspiracy. Look at all the buzz it's generated. Look at all the interest, right?
Yeah. You know what? And there actually has been a lot of conversation around the All-Star voting.
Right.
So I think that kind of plays into your point that it's become a topic at a time that the Stanley Cup playoffs have been going on and the NBA finals have been going on.
Right.
Baseball likes that.
Sounds like I'm turning you onto my theory here.
I think it's convenient for baseball. I don't think it's a conspiracy.
I don't understand where all these, you know what? It's not paranoia if they're really after you. That's what you got to know.
That's true. But they're just not really after you.
That aside, yes, Josh Donaldson in first place among, I believe, all voters in all of baseball. That's pretty cool. That'd be Jose Bautista did that a couple times. Now Josh Donaldson. Toronto Blue Jays fans spoiled with these great generational talents. Playing for their team.
Hey, Josh Donaldson is impressing. That's for sure.
Speaking of people who are impressing, and perhaps not generational talents, but Marco Estrada, back-to-back starts, taking a no-hitter into the eighth. I don't know. Is he the Blue Jays' ace? Marco Estrada.
He's been their best pitcher, I think, for the last stretch. I think that much is safe to say. Ace, Marco Estrada, I'm not sure that we want to make too many assumptions here, but he's been really good, and he's done a really good job of limiting home runs. He's got that devastating changeup, and I think you combine that weak contact on fly balls as opposed to those drives that he was allowing in Milwaukee last year. You're getting better results from a pitcher who's starting to be a steadying force in that rotation.
To me, that's the thing, is changeup's been so, so good these last two starts. And when that's working, everything else works for you. The fastball up in the zone is working. You can mix in the curveball. He's got a little cutter that he uses occasionally. It's not his most effective pitch. But like when that changeup is that devastating, I think that just sets up the rest of his stuff really well. And that's why we're seeing these results, is because he's just got such great feel for that pitch right now.
Should we expect the home run rate to climb?
One would think, but I don't know. I mean, when guys are so worried about that little sinking, fading changeup that you can swing three times at it and it hasn't hit the catcher's mitt yet, I wonder. But I mean, pitching at Rogers Center certainly, is not a mix for success with a guy who works in an 89 mile an hour fastball up in the zone.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I think that he's done, to his credit, a really good job. And even though he still allows fly balls, a lot of them have been weakly hit. And a weakly hit fly ball, Nick Ashbourne has a piece about this on our site, sportsnet.ca, but a weakly hit fly ball is a really good way to get an out. it almost always is going to be an out. So he's done a good job of that. Can he sustain that? It's really tough to say. But at this point, the Blue Jays will take it.
I much prefer a weekly hit fly ball to a weekly hit ground ball. A lot more can go wrong.
Yeah.
With the weekly hit ground ball. It's a really good point because you got a throw, you got a catch, you got some hops to worry about. Weekly hit fly ball, it's just sitting there.
Well, a pop-up is basically as good as a strikeout, right?
And I agree.
Yeah, I really think they are because almost every single time it's going to be an out. It's never going to be a double. It's never going to be a home run. So right. Pop-ups are great.
You got to like that. If there's base runners on, they can't go anywhere. They can't move. You know, if unless it's hit deep, they're probably not going to advance. We like that.
Definitely.
Marco Estrada, 15 swinging strikes in each of his last two starts. Been very, very good. Striking out 10 against the Tampa Bay Rays, 6 against the Baltimore Orioles. His time out before that. It's, you know, he was a guy who came over for Adam Lind in the offseason. And I don't know. I don't think that Adam Lind was going to be a part of the Blue Jays this year, no matter what. I think the Blue Jays wanted to move him, and that relationship had kind of soured, and it was time to move on from that. Yet when this happened, I think a lot of Blue Jays fans didn't look upon this trade especially favorably, especially when, you know, Marco Estrada starts the season as kind of the long man in the bullpen, not being used a whole lot. But now, when you look back on it, it certainly looks like a pretty nice move when you look at how Estrada stepped into the rotation for Aaron Sanchez and been quite fine. Well, not for Aaron Sanchez. He stepped in for Daniel Norris. But regardless, you know, Norris down to AAA and Sanchez goes down. Marco Estrada's held it down.
He has, and that's exactly what they've needed. As much as people talk about the need for aces, and don't get us wrong, I mean, I think that we both agree the Blue Jays could use an ace here. But if you have a few guys like Mark Burley and Marco Estrada who are just steadying things and giving you that nightly chance to win the ball game, that's going to get you pretty far. And so, yeah, I would agree that the discussion has probably changed a little bit from early in the season when Adam Lind was just hitting so tremendously. And now I think that he's fallen off back to his very respectable career levels. And Estrada has kind of climbed up to his career levels and even a little beyond that. And I think now we're seeing that both teams are probably fine with this deal, and that Lind, even though the Blue Jays could use a little bit more left-handed offense in their lineup, I think at the same time, it's just like you said. I don't think Lind was necessarily penciled into the Blue Jays' plans regardless.
This is an interesting time to look back on some of these moves and some of these deals. On Thursday, the Toronto Blue Jays will hit the halfway point of the season. Can you believe it? We're already there. So, you know, we could start with the Estrada for Lind deal, and I would mix in the presence of Justin Smoke there as well, because I think that him being, you know, on the roster and available to play first base and DH, you know, available to hit from both sides of the plate, I think that kind of made Adam Lind even more expendable. And, you know, it made him even more of a suitor to be turned into a pitcher. I look back on this deal favorably right now, even though Adam Lind's having a very fine season, you know, hitting .291, .362 on base, .856 OPS. You know, he's having a nice season. He's on a nice little 8-game hitting streak right now. You know, the power is still there for him. You know, he's walking a bit. But I think that when I look back on this deal, so far, and I think for the rest of the year, really, if, you know, Marco Estrada stays in the rotation or if he goes back to kind of a long man role, I still think it's a deal worth making. It's a deal that you can look back favorably on.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think it's a huge steal. I think that the Blue Jays are definitely benefiting from Estrada's production, and the Brewers are probably happy with Lind, I would imagine. And so it seems like a pretty fair deal, and one that's paying off for the Blue Jays now, because Estrada is really pitching at the top of his game, and that's exactly what Toronto needs right now.
So let's continue to play a little bit of revisionist transaction history here from the Toronto Blue Jays offseason moves and see how we feel about them. Russell Martin, you know, signed for 5 years, $82 million, has come exactly as advertised, I would say. Not quite putting up the numbers that he did last year. More power, but in terms of kind of your triple slash line, he's not quite where he was last year. But I don't think that as a Blue Jays fan, you can really have any complaints with Russell Martin.
Not at all. I think that he's surpassed what you could have expected from him. And like you said, his on-base has dropped off a little bit, but in exchange for that, you have more power. I mean, he's already matched his home run total from last year with 11. So I think that the Blue Jays will take that trade-off. A little bit more power, a little less on base, but still very good at .353. And the defense has just been so good, not only in terms of completely shutting down the running game, which he does have help with, Dickey, Burley, both among the pitchers who are very good at holding runners, But Martin has been off the charts and way better than what we've seen in the last couple of years here as far as throwing out runners. And I think, too, pitch framing. I mean, just the fact that he's able to receive the ball so well and grab his pitchers a few extra strikes while working with a very young staff, a staff that does benefit from the presence of a guy who has been around the league and worked with Mariano Rivera and Clayton Kershaw and all these other guys. I think that Russell Martin has been a tremendous pickup, and the Blue Jays are surely thrilled with it so far.
And a catcher who provides maybe not elite, but very, very good defense is not a luxury Blue Jays fans have enjoyed for a number of years.
No.
So I think that makes it look even better. Yeah. And I think the fact that Russell Martin's making $7 million this year makes it look way better, because he's already well provided $7 million worth of value. He'll provide much more. I do wonder that, you know, 2017 through 2019, Russell Martin's 34 through 36 age seasons, I wonder, you know, how we'll view this deal. He'll be making $20 million in each of those 3 years. You know, he's going to be 35, 36 on this roster, making $20 million, maybe not able to play catcher every day anymore.
Yeah, there's no question. And I think, like any free agent deal, the back end probably isn't going to look that good.
Yeah.
But at least the Blue Jays are getting value on the front end. And you compare that to some of the deal. I mean, you look at the Red Sox being a division rival of the Blue Jays. The Red Sox aren't even getting front-end value from Pablo Sandoval, Hanley Ramirez. So that's really the key. As long as it balances out and they get way more value than they're paying for now, and then at the other end, it kind of balances out the other way where he provides some value but not $20 million of value, then I think the Blue Jays will be happy with the deal.
Let's run through another obvious one here. Josh Donaldson added in trade. Brett Laurie going the other way. Kendall Graveman, Sean Nolan, Franklin Barreto. A pretty legitimate package of players when you look at it. Nobody overwhelming, but certainly, you know, quite a bit of value going the other way. But you get Josh Donaldson.
Yeah, I think clearly this is a huge win for the Blue Jays. I think that's pretty apparent.
But you know what, Kendall Graveman, as you pointed out on Twitter this morning, having a nice little year. You know, Sean Nolan's a guy you can use. Brett Laurie has been Brett Laurie. He's been healthy. He's been in the lineup.
He's been pretty good.
He has been that bad. He was striking out a ton early on, but he's figured it out a little bit. And who knows what Barreto is going to be, but, you know, a lot of people are very high on him.
Yeah, so I think Oakland gets value back here.
Yeah.
You know, you look at Graveman as a guy who fits with that park, very polished pitcher, who rose through the minor leagues very quickly and impressed on the way up. I think he's a really valuable asset for Oakland, and he's going to be there under control for 6 years. Probably won't be there that long because they'll trade him, as they do with most of these guys. But, you know, you have Laurie, you have Graveman. Like you said, Nolan and Barreto kind of rounded out. I think Oakland got value. I just don't think they got Josh Donaldson value.
I don't think it's as much of a fleecing as people think it was.
Yeah.
I think it was odd timing. Was the thing with Josh Donaldson with 4 years of control left. It seemed like a strange time to do it, especially like you look at the numbers Josh Donaldson's put up this year. Imagine what you could have gotten for him now with this, you know, with this production on the books.
Yeah, he's been, I mean, we've said it before, and I don't know that how much more can be said about Josh Donaldson, but in the MVP discussion, just a tremendous season for him so far.
Absolutely. Another one that I think is probably kind of obvious is Devin Travis for Anthony Gose. Anthony Gose, I think, probably wore out his welcome on this team a bit, just with, you know, not developing into what the Blue Jays thought he could be, maybe not utilizing the tools that he had, you know, maybe not having the best attitude towards, you know, having to go down to AAA and work on things. And Devin Travis has kind of settled a position for the Blue Jays that has been vacant since Aaron Hill, basically, you know, that hasn't had a consistent guy holding it down. Devin Travis has been very good, good hitter, good defender. Obviously, he was injured for a while, but it wasn't like an injury of, you know, conditioning or anything. He took a ball off the collarbone. There's nothing you can do about that. I think this trade so far has been a win.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that the way this trade was conceived was that the Tigers didn't really need Travis because they had Ian Kinsler. And then the Blue Jays needed a second baseman and were ready to see if they could turn Gose into something that would really help them. And it has. I think that Travis is a guy that, like you said, gives them an answer at a position that has really been up in the air for a few years.
And Anthony Gose, who was as hot as anybody in baseball for, you know, pretty much all of April, I would say, has very much come back down to earth. He's very much putting up Anthony Gose numbers right now. And obviously, he provides a lot of value defensively, a lot of value on the base paths. He's got just a cannon from center field in terms of an arm. I mean, he's a useful player, but I think he has kind of proven over the course of the season that he is Anthony Gose, and this is what he's going to do.
Sometimes with Gose, too, the tools don't line up with the results.
Yeah.
And so You end up with a guy who, even this year, he's 11 for 17 in stolen base attempts. So he's not actually helping on the bases because he's creating more outs than the stolen bases would justify. So I think that's a case where you have a really fast player who should be good on the bases, but it hasn't actually lined up for results. And, you know, like you said, he's helping the Tigers much more than Travis would have at AAA. So I think the Tigers are probably content to have Ghost. But, you know, from the Blue Jays standpoint, this has got to be a favorable deal for them.
Yeah, you look at Anthony Ghost in June. We're looking at a 167 batting average, a 214 OBP, and a 182 slugging percentage.
Slumping.
Abominable.
Yeah.
So those three deals clearly worked out. Now we get a little bit interesting. Michael Saunders for Jay Happ. This is one that I will come out, and I'm a big Michael Saunders fan. When they picked him up, I liked the addition, and I thought he was a guy with maybe a bit of, you know, maybe in a different ballpark, maybe, you know, in a different division could do something. But I mean, it just hasn't happened. Michael Saunders so far has played in 9 games, 36 plate appearances, hitting 194. I mean, he was never healthy when he did play. Obviously twisted his knee on that sprinkler in spring training, and hasn't been himself since. And he's currently in Dunedin, I mean, waiting for another MRI, you know, waiting for the go-ahead. And, as much as you hate to put kind of injury-prone labels on players, I mean, Michael Saunders has been out injured all year. And this is the knock against him when he came over, was that this is a guy who's been injured a lot. Jay Happ in Seattle, a 3.89 ERA in 15 starts. Not bad. That would have looked pretty nice for the Blue Jays. This one is perhaps one that you would like to take a mulligan on.
Yeah, I think that it's pretty clear, and it's through no fault of Saunders, but I think that from a results standpoint, this deal has favored the Mariners by far. I think that's pretty apparent. You know, Happ has been pretty good for them, and Saunders just hasn't produced anything for the Blue Jays. So even though from a process standpoint, when you look at this deal and when it was made, you're getting an outfielder with upside, an outfielder who you can control through 2016, and the Blue Jays wanted to try something different in the rotation, go with a bit more youth. They're ready to move on from Happ and create some flexibility payroll-wise. So I get the process behind the deal. At the time, I thought it was a deal that made a lot of sense for Toronto. But that being said, it hasn't worked out from a results standpoint.
Jay Happ has actually likely been better than he has been. He's got a FIP of 3.55, which indicates that he's maybe even been a little bit unlucky to get to his 3.89 ERA. His performance would have been very nice in this rotation. However, knowing what we know about the Blue Jays outfield this year, about Dalton Pompey, unable to hold down a job, Kevin Pillar has been very good, but we've still seen Danny Valencia out there. We've still seen Chris Colabello start a lot of games in left field. I mean, maybe the Blue Jays were in a situation where they needed to kind of stockpile outfielders. They needed to bring in a guy like Michael Saunders. You know, maybe this is a deal that needed to be made just purely because there was such a need in the outfield.
I think that's a good point, because who could have foreseen that Valencia would be hitting the way he is, and the Colabello would be hitting 330 still.
Yeah.
Even Ezekiel Carrera has come up and produced. Kevin Pillar has been really good. So I think that you add that up, you have more answers in the outfield than you expected to. And at that, from that standpoint, they haven't necessarily missed Saunders' production, but at the same time, it's not a deal that you can say was anything but a win for the Mariners.
But I think that right now, when Michael Saunders does come back, and he's expected back probably after the All-Star break, it's going to be very nice, considering the fact that, you know, Ezekiel Carrera is still on this team, who is, you know, kind of a fringe major league guy. Chris Colabello's been out there. I mean, you are kind of adding something that you need mid-season. It would have been nice to have that all season. I think if you could go back, you certainly wouldn't pull the trigger on this deal. But if you don't, you're at a position right now where you desperately need an outfielder, and where, you know, right now where the Blue Jays are looking to trade for starting pitching, possibly a reliever, they'd also have to be looking to trade for an outfielder.
Yeah, and that might be on their radar instead. I mean, I'm sure people will be very disappointed if this is the line of reasoning that they hear come July 31, but you can almost hear, oh, you know, Saunders and Aaron Sanchez are the midseason reinforcements, which they need to do more than that. But those guys can be among the reinforcements coming to the Blue Jays, and that would help them.
Fans hate that.
But they do.
They hate it.
Yes.
They hate it so much. Yeah. But if you could say, maybe Jeff Hoffman is a, you know what I mean, is a reinforcement to the starting rotation or the bullpen at
first
some point.
First, he's got to figure out Dunedin. But very good start, by the way. His most recent start at Dunedin was very good. And that's promising for the Blue Jays. But first things first.
That's maybe as harshly critical as I've heard you've been of anyone. The results haven't been great. But you talk to people who've seen him, and they say the stuff is there.
For sure.
It's great. Maybe he's just kind of figuring out, professional pitching, which is a step.
Absolutely. And he's on the right track. I think his last outing was 6 Ks, 0 walks, and 5 innings. I mean, that's exactly the kind of production you look for from a guy who was touted as one of the top pitchers in the draft last year.
Another one that I would criticize Blue Jays on would be not adding to the bullpen in the offseason. Is a clear need, clearly something that they weren't good enough, a place where they weren't good enough, and it didn't work out. And I do think that Alex Anthopoulos expected Marcus Stroman to be in this rotation and expected Aaron Sanchez to be in the bullpen. But if one injury is enough to derail your plans, you don't have enough depth. Like, you just don't have enough margin for error. And there were, relievers out there who maybe weren't the sexiest guys and maybe weren't, but, John Axford comes to mind. He signed for $2.6 million. I mean, I believe the Blue Jays could have afforded that. I believe the Blue Jays could have brought him in here. There was mutual interest there, at least we were led to believe. I think that this was an offseason move that was a mistake, not adding to the bullpen.
Yeah, and it's one of those non-moves, where in years past, maybe it's been the bench or the bullpen or both. And this year, the bench has actually worked out well, but the bullpen, I agree. I think they now need reinforcements. They acknowledge as much, and I think that they could have addressed that earlier when it was still pretty evident that they didn't have a lot of established options. And you know what? You want to have some room in your bullpen. I don't think you want to arrive with 7 spots accounted for, because then Roberto Osuna doesn't have any room to emerge. Yeah. But at the same time, you want to have some answers there. I think there's a balance to be struck, and I think that the Blue Jays could have added one more arm. Maybe it's someone who doesn't even pitch well. Maybe you release them in spring training. But it's one more guy to give you that much more depth, like you said, a contingency guy to make sure that you're covered.
And at that point in the offseason, I mean, you just have so many more options. Now, as you're trying to add to this thing in season, I feel like prices are higher in trade and in some, for certain, the guys that you would want to add right now, right? Like, you can't take a flyer on a guy like that, like you were just saying, now, like you could in the offseason. Now you're looking to add an impact guy who's going to step in and give you good innings. Prices are higher.
Yep. No, it's very true. And I think that you're looking at giving up both prospects and cash at this point, as opposed to in the offseason, you can do it with just cash or even the opportunity. And I think, I know some relievers looked at Toronto as a bullpen with opportunity, right? You have, Brett Cecil's there, but you didn't have an established closer with Casey Jansen signing in Washington.
Yeah.
And that was a place where the Blue Jays did have the opportunity. It's not something that they added to. And to be fair, I mean, the bullpen has been okay. It's not a disaster, but it's an area that they need to improve upon.
It's not, but there was a clear need earlier in the season. I think it settled very nicely, and I think Roberto Osuna is a revelation.
Yep.
He's been incredible. Aaron Loop's been okay recently. On and off. Brett Cecil looked very, very good when I saw him the other day. He seems to be past kind of that rough patch. But I think there's definitely an area of need earlier on in this season where they really needed a shutdown guy. John Gibbons really needed another option, and he didn't have it.
No, that's a good point.
And Miguel Castro blowing up was a big part of that. Him kind of crapping out was like, Miguel Castro could have been that guy if he was, if he had control and if he, I think there's a mental issue there that's not insignificant, just about dealing with adversity and dealing with struggle. But Miguel Castro is a guy that, that could have filled that role and didn't.
Yeah, and it's tough too. I mean, Castro had so many highs and lows in like a 6-week period, and I can't imagine that it would be easy for any 20-year-old to deal with.
Well, and this is another one of those, off-season moves we can look back at, is bringing the rookies north. And you look at Miguel Castro, Roberto Osuna, Dalton Pompey, Daniel Norris, Aaron Sanchez also in that group, I suppose. But I think Sanchez is going to be on this team regardless.
Yeah.
I think those first four are really the guys who were, the ones who you could have started in the minors. And when you look at Norris, Osuna, Castro, and Pompey, one of them hit. Roberto Osuna.
Yeah, and he's hit in a big way. He really has. I think that, Norris, didn't end up putting together the kind of command that the Blue Jays were looking for. That led to the high pitch counts. He wasn't getting deep into games. And it was a tall order, so now he's trying to regroup. And then Castro, like you said, didn't amount to the performance the Blue Jays were looking for. And Pompey, now back at Double A. So he wasn't as ready as they expected either. So I think that, yeah, you're looking at Asuna. He's the one guy. They knew they were going to have to adapt on the fly. They knew that not all these guys were going to hit. And I guess it's not surprising, I guess, that you end up with one of these guys hitting out of the four.
I mean, it was a significant risk taking putting this much trust and pressure on young players. You look at Dalton Pompey, a guy who grew up down the road, right? Rocketed through the system, like much faster than anyone thought. And, to his credit, had a great September last year, had a good spring. And then this year, I mean, it just kind of fell apart. He said he was playing scared. You saw it in the outfield. There was some trepidation, the results of the plate weren't there. He had to go down Daniel Norris, just didn't have the command. One of the top pitching prospects in baseball, clearly wasn't ready yet. I mean, you this was the risk of doing this in a season where you kind of have to go for broke to a certain extent. As much as this core is going to be together for a few years, this is a very important season for Alex Anthopoulos in terms of getting to the playoffs and winning. That was a pretty significant risk to put that much weight on, four young players.
It was. At the time, I thought it was a risk worth taking. Yeah. I think, too, a lot of fans did. There was no way the Blue Jays were going to let Miguel Castro go to the minor leagues. After the spring
he had,
he was so dominant, so there's no way. And then in the rotation, you could have gone with Estrada over Norris, but the thinking at the time was Norris gives you upside that Estrada doesn't offer. And at the time, I was on board with that thinking. See what Norris offers and then adjust from there. Pompey, it seemed as though he was going to be a guy who could at least give you the defense, if not much offense, especially in the way of power early on. So I can see how they arrived at this decision. At the time, I thought it was the right decision. But again, it kind of goes back to the process versus results thing that we were talking about with Saunders. I think that the way the Blue Jays reached these decisions was understandable and well thought out. The results, though, would tell you that it hasn't worked out the way they were hoping for.
Baseball is a constant correction of process and results, constant satisfying of those two things. So you can kind of follow the line of thinking as well of, well, you got to give these kids a shot at some point. And like you said, Miguel Castro had to be on this team. You couldn't have a spring like that, say, oh, too bad, go ride the bus.
Yeah.
Right? Like Roberto Osuna had to be on this team. And that worked out, and like Dalton Pompey, I mean, that was more, I think, a situation of there's nobody else to play this position. Kevin Pillar has emerged and had a very nice year. But I don't think that in spring training, that faith of him having the year that he had was there. So no. I think the Pompey one was a bit more of a necessity thing, really. And the Norris one is one as well, where they had options. Like you said, they could have gone to Estrada. There's some other things they could have done. They went north with Norris and it didn't work out. So you can definitely follow the line of thinking, but you wonder if that, looking back on it, and obviously hindsight's 2020, playing revisionist history here, but I mean, you looking back on it, perhaps it was too big of a risk to take. Perhaps there's a learning experience here.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And there are all those different things to balance out. But I do think that, it's kind of an aggressiveness, right? The Blue Jays are saying, we're going with the talent. We're gonna go push our chips in here. And to me, like looking at all these moves, I really see the thinking behind all of them, except for the bullpen one. That's the one where I say, why not? And I said this at the time, but why not add just a couple more names? See what happens. It could be minor league deals, like the Belisario deal that almost happened.
Yeah.
But by and large, and looking, I always think that to assess a general manager, to assess a front office, you look at the big moves.
Right.
Donaldson, Martin. These are the big moves the Blue Jays made this offseason. They're looking very good.
The rookies were big moves in a sense.
And that's a good point. That's a good point.
And they did hit with one in Roberto Osuna, and that kind of proved that, this kind of thing can work out. And I think it also speaks to just how difficult that step is to the majors, like how tough it is to make that transition from, like, you talk about a guy like Dale Norris with all the talent in the world and came up to the major leagues and struggled against this level of hitting. It's a tough thing to do, and a lot of it is mentality and mindset and, what you take to the mound or what you take to the field. I mean, as much as it can be hard to discuss, intangibles like that or things like that, I mean, you talk to players in the game and you talk to managers and you talk to front office types, and they say that is a very big part of it.
And it's the craft of it, too. I mean, you look at at something like throwing a baseball, and there are just so many elements that go into repeating a delivery. It's a tough thing to do. So it shouldn't come as a surprise to the Blue Jays, to you or to me, that Daniel Norris maybe isn't repeating that delivery and generating the command that the Blue Jays hoped. They didn't know this, but they were hoping that he would have that coming out of spring training. Combine that with the stuff he has, that potential still exists, but it's now potential that he's trying to realize in AAA as opposed to up here.
So if we look back on what the Blue Jays did this offseason just as a whole, and we look at the positive moves, we like the Estrada for Lind, Martin for 5 years, Donaldson trade, Travis for Ghost, we liked those. The ones we did not like, the Saunders for Hap and not adding to the bullpen, and the one that's kind of a push is the rookies. Because, you know, you got Roberto Osuna, who worked out very well, and you know, Daniel Norris, at least, like, he wasn't giving up a ton of runs. He's just kind of walking the world. But then, you know, Miguel Castro, who struggled mightily, and Dalton Pompey as well. How do we feel about that in terms of we got four moves we like, two we don't, and one kind of in the middle?
Overall, I think it was a very good offseason by the Blue Jays. I think that they took a... What did they win last year? 83 games?
Something like that, yeah. I can look it up for you quickly here.
Yeah, they took a team that was kind of middling and that needed more talent, and some would say they needed a culture change. And they turned it into a team that has the best offense in baseball, clear need on the pitching side, mm-hmm. but they're a contender. And I think not only are they a contender now, but they don't have ugly contracts, you know, that they didn't do, oh, we're going to sell a future at the expense just as a way of getting a winning team on the field in 2015. So I think that, you know, long-term, you have Donaldson 4 years, you have Martin for five, you have these rookies who may be struggling, but you have them coming up through the pipeline. I think it was a very good offseason. And that's not to say that the Blue Jays are guaranteed anything as a result of that. Mm-hmm. They still have work to do, a lot of work to do, but I still think it was a very good offseason.
You're right, 83 wins last year. So we're a couple days from the midpoint, but they're at 41 wins right now. Say they get one more by Thursday, that would put them at 42. That would put them on pace for 84 wins after 83
right.
last year.
Yeah.
But there is at least more promise this year. I think you feel better about this team at this point in the season right now than you did last year. This point last year, the Blue Jays were kind of falling out of first place, not looking very good at all. They were on their slide. Right now, they're kind of on their build, I would say. I think you feel better this year.
For sure, and I'm sure that some of our listeners will knock on wood as they hear me say this, but I think the Blue Jays right now are a healthier team.
Yeah.
You know, last year this time was when you had Encarnacion, Lurie going down, Lind was going down. I think at this point, even with Sanchez on the DL, the pieces are in place.
Can't believe you would even want to tempt fate with that.
Hey, I don't. It's like a no-hitter jinx, right? That's what I say here does not determine who stays healthy and who gets hurt.
That's true. Somebody who will say things here is Ben Badler of Baseball America. He takes a look at the international market for them, writes a whole lot. He had his top 30 come out today, and the number one player on that top 30, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., a player linked to the Toronto Blue Jays very strongly. Everyone believes they're going to sign him. We'll find out what Vladdy's son is all about coming up on At The Letters.
Really happy to be joined here by Ben Badler, the national writer for Baseball America, and really one of the best when it comes to international prospects, the international game in general. Ben, thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on, guys.
For sure. And one of the big prospects that we wanted to talk to you about, and one of the big reasons that we wanted to ask you about some of this year's top international prospects, is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Obviously, the name familiar to any kind of baseball fan. And now the son of the longtime Expos and Angels slugger is appearing on the scene as one of the top prospects. What can you tell us about Vladimir Guerrero's son?
Yeah, no doubt. We just ranked him as our number one prospect for July 2nd for this year. And I know a lot of teams had him as either their number one guy overall or certainly one of the top five or so players in the class. I don't think he's got the best combination of hitting ability and power in the class. He's got excellent bat control. Obviously, it seems like the hand-eye coordination has been passed down a generation, because he has a really good knack for putting the bat to the ball. Very very quick bat, good bat speed, good plate coverage, performs well in games, and he's got power too. You know, a lot of guys who are, still 16 years old, it's either a lot of times you get a kid who has huge power and can't really hit in games, or you have a guy who might have some feel for putting the bat to the ball, but is just physically weak. But Guerrero is 6'1", 210 pounds. He's built like a man. He hits it. He hits it hard in games. The question marks on him are, where is he going to play? You don't see, too many kids who are 15. I mean, he was 15 years old. He was about 220 at 6'1". I think he's cut down a little bit, but there's definitely some concern. He's not the kind of athlete that his father was. Doesn't have the same kind of arm, although I don't know that many players in baseball history had that kind of athleticism and arm strength that his father had. So it's kind of a tough comparison, but the hope is that he can maintain his body and the athleticism to stay in an outfield corner, whether it's left field or maybe right field if the arm strength improves. Otherwise, it's going to be first base or maybe even DH. So, there's some risk there in that he's going to have to hit a ton to have a lot of value. But even with that, even if there's, scouts who think he may even end up at first base, the bat and the power potential are so good that this is a guy who could potentially hit in the middle of the lineup for you, obviously, in several years down the road. But the bat and the power potential should be enough to carry them at any position he ends up at.
The speculation has been that Vlad Jr. is likely to sign with the Blue Jays. We've seen numbers anywhere from $3.5 million to $4.5 million. What are you hearing about where he's going to land and how much he might cost?
Yeah, I think the definite favorite for him is Toronto. I think he almost certainly is going to end up with the Blue Jays. In terms of the price tag, it's always tricky. There's always rumors going around. Certainly, he's one of the top players in the class, and I think he's going to get paid among the top players in the class. I think the top guys will probably end up around $4 million or so this year as the prices continue to go up. Last year, the top guy was top guys were around $3 million, and it's the prices are just shooting up this year, especially in the Dominican Republic. I don't think Vlad is necessarily going to get to that mark. The Blue Jays, he's really the only top player that I've heard them link to. And it seems possible that, the Blue Jays may just go completely over their bonus pool, which is about $2.32 million. And I think Vlad is certainly going to cost more money than that. But you can trade up to, for 150% of your bonus pool by acquiring slots from other slot values from other teams, which is a whole needlessly complicated, convoluted system that MLB has. But they can trade up for about $3.5 million. So I could see a situation where they might just spend all their money on Vlad and still be able to stay under the pool. I think that's certainly one of the two things that a lot of people are looking at, whether they're going to sign Vlad and just go completely over their pool, or they're going to be able to trade for enough money to stay under their pool and avoid any future signing restrictions.
Yeah, you mentioned that convoluted process, and it really is a confusing one, I think, for anyone who's on the outside or doesn't follow it on a daily basis like you do. Can you kind of explain to us what it would mean for the Blue Jays if they did sign Vladimir Guerrero, not only for this year, but potentially in future seasons, and how that could impact their ability to sign international players?
Yeah, you mean in terms of the process for trading, or just the process for the penalty system?
Yeah, the penalty system, as you say, if they were to sign him and then add on to that by signing other players, that could potentially put them over the cap that MLB imposes.
Right. So every team has a bonus pool that they're given that's determined based on reverse order of winning percentage the previous season. So the Blue Jays are around the middle of the pack. They have a $2.3 million bonus pool. If you go more than 15% beyond your bonus pool, you're not allowed to sign any players who are eligible for the pool for more than $300,000 for the next two signing periods. So I think a lot of there's definitely teams. There's always a few teams every year that are willing to go over their bonus pool. Last year, the Yankees completely blitzed the international market and spent about $16-17 million on international bonuses. And then when you go that far over your pool, they also tack on a 100% overage tax. So really, the Yankees spent close to $35 million just on these July 2nd kids for 16-year-old kids out of Latin America for the most part. We've seen teams like the Red Sox and the Rays, the Cubs, the Rangers in previous years have gone over their pools, and the Diamondbacks and the Angels have done it as well. They've done it mostly to sign a Cuban player. But you can also trade up for a little bit more money, but you're limited to trading up to an additional 50% of your original pool. So that's how the Jays could get up to close to $3.5 million through trading for other teams' slot values. But I think the way a lot of teams look at it is, okay, you can go over your pool, but if you're going to go way over your pool, you better get a super elite level talent, usually somebody who's going to be older than 16 years old, maybe a more advanced or polished Cuban player. Or you go in and you sign a bunch of the top guys, like the Yankees did last year. The Red Sox did it to get pitching last year, and then they went and got Yoan Moncada later in the process. Last year, the Rays went over to sign, mainly to sign Adrian Rondon, a Dominican shortstop, who was the number one prospect last year. But they got some other interesting players as well during that class. And given that I haven't heard the Blue Jays really linked to anybody else, I could see them possibly going over if they really think Vladimir Guerrero is worth it. But I think at that point, if it's only going to be for one player, I think it's definitely worth it to try to pursue trades, to try to get the player and stay under the pool so that you don't have signing restrictions for the next 2 years and you won't be able to sign players for more than $300,000 for the next 2 years. I think the way a lot of teams look at it is, if you're going to go over, get several years worth of talent in one class. I think we might see the Blue Jays try to swing some trades starting on Thursday.
Yeah, that'd be something to follow for sure. And I know a lot of what you guys do at Baseball America is really assessing the pulse of the industry and taking a really big picture view at it. But in your estimation, from what you've seen and what you've heard, is Vladimir Guerrero the kind of guy that you would potentially want to center your July 2 class around? Is he that kind of guy that really will be worth all the cost and justify the hype that he's generating?
Yeah, I think so. It's for a lot of teams. I know there are some teams that were willing to take their whole bonus pool and just throw it at him. But I think it just comes down to some philosophical stuff of whether you want to really put all your eggs into one basket or if you want to sign several players. So it's really uncommon to see a team only sign one player. I think that's kind of a misnomer, although the Brewers did do it last year for Gilbert Lara, a Dominican, well, I guess he's a shortstop now, call him an infielder because not really sure where he's going to end up. But another guy with a really big bat and really big power who's up to a nice start in the Arizona League right now. So, I think if they go over, I'd like to see them get some other players to add more depth to the class. Maybe go into the Cuban market. There's a lot of good looking Cuban players out there right now. I think the Dodgers are going over their bonus pool for sure. So they're going to be tough to beat on any Cuban player that they like. But there's certainly a lot of Cuban talent out there as well. I think if they like one of them, I think it's worth pursuing them to consider going over if you're going to get Vladimir Guerrero Jr., the number one player in the class, to go along with it too.
Well, yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense to me to do, if you are going to throw all this money at Vlad Jr., to do what the Yankees did last year and what looks like the Dodgers are doing this year in the Cuban market, as you alluded to, by just throwing a lot of money at everyone. And, if you're going to get wet, you might as well go swimming, kind of that kind of ideal. Do you think that maybe the prospect of an international draft becoming a reality sooner rather than later has kind of spurred the Blue Jays to pick this as their year to really go over their bonus pool and go after a player like Vlad Jr.?
I think certainly the possibility of an international draft at some point in the next few years is weighing heavily on the minds of everybody who's in Latin America. With Vladdy, I think it's more just that the Blue Jays really just love the player. I mean, I ask scouts to compare him to Rafael Devers, who's a third baseman in the Red Sox farm system, who's going to be playing in the Futures game, who's, you know, an 18-year-old kid who signed out of the Dominican Republic 2 years ago for $1.5 million, and everybody said, or I shouldn't say everybody, but there was a pretty strong consensus that he was the best hitter on the market this year and a guy who had pretty good power that was going to continue to develop, and he's, you know, the same age as a high school senior right now, and he's been absolutely annihilating the South Atlantic League in low A hitting and hitting for power. And I asked them, you know, who would you take at the same age, Vladdy or Devers? And I think the consensus was, you know, maybe Devers was a little bit more polished of a hitter, whereas Guerrero had more raw power. But there were, you know, I think there was a kind of a 50-50 split on who teams preferred. But there were definitely teams that thought Guerrero had a chance to be more of an impact bat than Devers. So, you know, if you're looking at a guy who could potentially hit in the middle of your lineup, I think that was just the talent overall, which just said, look, let's do whatever it takes and get this guy wrapped up on July 2nd.
It sounds like a busy couple days ahead, not only for the Blue Jays, but for you as well, Ben. Really appreciate you joining us, and we'll definitely be sure to follow you in the next week or so as all this unfolds, at Ben Badler on Twitter, and of course at Baseball America as well. Thanks so much for doing this, Ben.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on, guys.
Continues on At the Letters. Our immense thanks to Ben Badler of Baseball America for giving us the lowdown on Vladdy Guerrero Jr., who could be a Toronto Blue Jay as soon as this Thursday. We will find out. Definitely stay tuned to that, but definitely a very intriguing prospect and a very intriguing sign if the Blue Jays do make it. Also intriguing, Alex Anthopoulos made some comments about the trade market and about what he might want to do on it on Baseball Central with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker on Monday afternoon. Here's what the general manager had to say.
I guess I just to characterize the trade market right now, I guess the best way is I think it was in a deep freeze, and I'd say it's starting to thaw a little bit. And which is exciting. I mean, definitely, I'd say in the last 5 days or so, all of a sudden, a lot more conversations with teams, a lot more teams saying, look, we're probably a week away from making some decisions on what we're going to do. It definitely has started to move here, and I think it's going to continue to accelerate, especially in the coming week. But you see a lot more teams now realizing just before the All-Star break, they're going to start really engaging, and it's starting. You know, what we come away with or don't come away with, I have no idea. Clearly, we're looking to be active. We're looking to add and make the club a lot better.
Alex Anthopoulos saying the Blue Jays are looking to be active in the trade market, which is probably not that much of a surprise to people. There are clearly needs here on the pitching staff and in the relief corps when it comes to the Toronto Blue Jays. But what Alex did kind of lend a bit of interesting credence to was what his philosophy might be when it comes to acquiring players and how that has evolved over his time as general manager. Here's what Alex had to say.
You know, there's times and there's opportunities you get caught up in the value of players or their contracts. And when guys are available, you know, they might be available for not much in terms of talent acquisition, not much in terms of cost and salaries and things like that. And you may cut some corners. And, you know, I'm a big Warren Buffett fan, and he's, you know, one of his things he'll say is, it's better to buy a wonderful company at a fair price than a fair company at a wonderful price. I think that's probably the big switch for me. You know, there's a lot of the times there's guys that just, wow, this is a really good deal. This is, you know, this guy's worth a lot more, whether it's in trade or contract and so on. And you may cut some corners. And ultimately, we're just maybe being a little more selective with who we do bring in. And if that means paying a premium because someone does fit the list or things that the criteria that we have, it's more important.
Interesting comments from Alex Anthopoulos about his philosophy, how things have changed, what he might be looking to do on the trade market. The one that obviously stands out is the comment, you know, it's better to buy a wonderful company at a fair price than it is to buy a fair company at a wonderful price, which is perhaps an indication that Alex Anthopoulos would look to move some of his larger trade chips, some of his more premier prospects in trade. You know, there's some wonderful companies out there. I could think of a wonderful company in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
I could think of a wonderful company in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
I mean, how do those comments strike you?
They definitely hint at the fact that Anthopoulos wants to get quality. I mean, that's obvious, right?
Right?
So he wants to get something that's really good, a clear upgrade. I think that if you wanted, throw a name out there, John Neese.
Right.
I would assume, this is my speculation, I would assume that if he had really wanted John Neese, he probably could have obtained him by this point. So it says to me that the Blue Jays are setting their sights higher and that they want to get someone who's going to be an impact guy down the stretch for this team and someone who maybe can be a frontline starter or shutdown reliever.
If you really wanted John Neese, I mean, you could have had him last year at the deadline, I think. I think you could have had him in the offseason. I mean, I think Alex Anthopoulos, he would have gone and got him by now.
Yeah.
Really. So, you know, I hear his name get thrown around a lot. I mean, and it doesn't even really look that great when you look at, you know, next year he's making $9 million. A couple team options after that, which would be a million dollar buyout to get out of those.
It's too much.
Yeah. It doesn't. That's not a wonderful company. We want a wonderful company. Is
yeah.
there a wonderful company with the Chicago White Sox, perhaps?
I think so. I think that buying stock in Samardzija Incorporated might be a wise move. Seriously. I think that Jeff Samardzija, obviously a guy who's been on the trade market, it seems like, for the last couple of years, and he was traded last year for Addison Russell, one of the top prospects in baseball at the time. I think this year, because there's only a couple months of control remaining, the price is going to have to be lower. And his ERA, Samardzija, is sitting at 4.56. So it's not a pretty ERA. He's got...
There was like two blow-up starts, though, that are inflating that.
Sure.
Eh? Otherwise, he's been fine.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm on the side of the fence that says Samardzija's a very good pitcher who is more talented than his ERA would suggest. So I'm right with you there. I think that as a guy who can get strikeouts, who can limit walks, who can get swings and misses... You know, he's pitched in the American League, he's pitched in the National League, he's had success in both leagues. I think that he's someone relatively young as well. He's not someone on the downside of his career where you're thinking, you know, Aaron Harang, is he going to sustain this? I think Samardzija is a guy with a much better chance of sustaining the success, not necessarily that he's had this year, but that he's shown in years past.
I think that Samardzija is really interesting kind of mid-point between, you look at a Johnny Cueto, who's obviously an elite talent, one of the best pitchers in the game, but you'd have to get, you know, sell the farm to get him. Then you look at a guy like a John Neese, or I don't know, like your Mike Leakes of this world, like just you know, that's kind of second tier of pitchers, you know, those kind of fair companies you can get for a wonderful price. I think Jeff Samardzija fits nicely kind of in between those of, okay, you wouldn't have to give up too much and you'd still get a pretty quality pitcher back. And, you know, as you alluded to, he's not going to cost what he did at the trade deadline last year, you know, which kind of indicates to me that, you know, maybe Alex Anthopoulos had some interest in him last year, didn't like the price. Maybe the price has come down to where he likes it. And also, maybe Alex Anthopoulos' philosophy has kind of evolved a bit to the point where he says, okay, I will kind of part with a top pro. You know, if I have to trade a Daniel Norris to get this guy, maybe that's something that I'll entertain now.
If you're contemplating a big trade and you're looking at the big names first, Johnny Cueto, like you said, is arguably the top name, certainly the top right-hander up there with Cole Hamels. Are you concerned at all about the fact that the Reds are easing up as far as his workload and making sure to manage his innings pretty carefully? Because if you look at it, since May 19th, he's made five starts. You know, there was a 9-day gap between his most recent two starts. I just wonder. I mean, is that something that you look at it and you say, oh, he's going to be fine? Or is that something that is cause for concern?
Was it? It was 2 years ago when he had the injury shortened season, right? Like I feel like a couple years ago, he only made like 50 or 60 innings.
2 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, 2 years ago. And then last year logged a ton of innings. Maybe you do wonder. Maybe there is something. Maybe, you know, since he discovered something with him and they were like, whoa, 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 hang on. We got to maintain this value here. Let's back this guy off and try not to be too suspicious about it. Maybe you're onto it.
I don't know. And it's something you can never know from the outside. The Blue Jays can't know it. We can't know it. But I do wonder. And it's something where his performance is so incredible that you want the guy almost no matter what. But, you know, it's a question I'm sure teams are asking.
It's just the thing is there's not too many great names out there. You know, like you said, past Cueto, it's Hamels and then Samardzija and then a serious drop-off.
Kazmir you could throw in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, Kazmir, I guess, right?
He's having a good year, but...
In terms of like just pure like guys with elite stuff, elite talent, I mean, there's a serious drop off there. So you're trying. There's not that many wonderful companies out there, which is why I thought that comment was very interesting.
Yeah, no, it is. I think it definitely is an interesting one and one to kind of keep in the back of our minds as we're looking around. The other thing is, and I think it's a good point to keep in mind as well. But sometimes for Anthopoulos' bigger moves, it's been someone that we aren't expecting.
Always. Yeah. Pretty much always. You think about the amount of times that Alex Anthopoulos has made like a jaw-dropping move. You look at Josh Donaldson, the Marlins trade, Dickey, you know, trading, you know, Vernon Wells. You know, like some of the deals that he's made have been just absolutely mind-boggling. And it's never, or at least very rarely, somebody that gets talked about.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's true. So maybe there's a way to do this. I still think it's, you know, it's going to be tough to pry someone's ace away, but it sounds as though that would be plan A.
Yeah. No, I think that, you know, if Alex Anthopoulos does make a move, it'll likely be someone that we haven't even heard about. You know, somebody that we're all going to be scrambling to be like, wait, this guy was available? Like, what? This guy was up in trade? I do like your Cueto theory. I do like starting and ending the podcast with conspiracy theories.
That's true. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, the MLB balloting conspiracy and Johnny Cueto's secret injury.
Yeah.
I like it.
Wow. We're really going off the rails here on At the Letters.
This is on the rails, as far as I'm concerned, for At the Letters. This is all that we have for you this week. We thank you for coming along with us, as always. My name's Arden Zwelling. I'm on Twitter at Arden Zwelling. Ben Nicholson-Smith is on Twitter at BNicholson-Smith. Our producer, Sam_Alton_McKee on Twitter. Get at us. Send us some questions, some feedback, comments, whatever you'd like to do. Please like, favorite, share, and subscribe. Listen to us on sportsnet.ca and iTunes. Those are all the things I am contractually obligated to say. Thank you for coming along. This has been At the Letters.